Hello, this is Chayla Harridge-Meyer. I'm 25 years old. Today's date is September 15th, 2008, and we're here in Springfield, Massachusetts. And I'm here to listen to the story that Ruth is going to share with us today. And here's Ruth.
My name is Ruth Brenner. I am 80 years old. Today's date is September 15, 2008. I am located here in Springfield, Massachusetts. And the relationship to my partner is the storyteller herself, Shala. Okay, I'd like to begin with my story. I'd like to tell you the story of my husband, Julie Brenner's story, as I lived it. The day we learned that my husband's central vision was lost forever, we thought we would never smile again. How wrong we were. It all started the morning Julie went into the bathroom to shave. He looked into the mirror, and he didn't see anything. He called himself the Invisible Man. After the doctor's diagnosis and more doctors being consulted, Julie was declared legally blind. His central vision was gone. But he was told that he still had peripheral vision. As the social worker interviewed us, as required by law, she casually asked if Jules was a veteran. Since the answer was in the affirmative, she gave us the appropriate name and title of the VA representative and his telephone number. That was the beginning of our climb up the ladder to living more fully and constructively with what vision Jules had left. We soon found out about the six-week workshop for low-vision veterans given at the Veterans Medical Facility in West Haven, Connecticut. From there, he signed up for the computer course as well. So between these two workshops, Jules learned to deal with this huge problem of blindness. He did take these two courses, and a few years later repeated them. I do have to say that without the veteran's expertise and hands-on help on how to use what sight Jules did have, depression and more depression would have settled in. His activities would have been reduced to near zero. I recall the time I went to visit him at the facility at the end of his training. We were going up the escalator in a shopping mall with the mobility instructor looking on, and Jules said to me, "I don't have to be afraid anymore." First of all, to me, my husband was the bravest man alive, and afraid was just not in his vocabulary. What he was saying was that he had been taught how to use his peripheral vision. He used muscles near the eyes that he didn't even know he had. So yes, he could see. He could see peripherally. He was assigned by his instructor to go up the escalator by himself and then go to the Burger King booth and read the menu on display at the top of the site. To read the menu, he had been given a monocle for one eye to help him do that. Jules passed. Yes, indeed. Jules Brenner had no need again to be afraid because he could not see like everyone else. Then the problem came about how to pass his time effectively on a daily basis. He became a walker. He walked 2 to 3 miles almost daily. His mobility instructor had taught him how to cross streets safely, and equipped with his monocle to read street signs, he walked. First, he walked to the bank to do his bank business. I must say the tellers, without exception, made his business transactions possible. The first few times he did this, unbeknown to him, I followed in the car to see how he fared. I never had to intercede. Once I recall, he was going to meet me at the beauty parlor located not far from the house. He was late, and I started to pace. But suddenly, but steadfast, from the wrong direction, I saw him coming. He had made a wrong turn. But because he had his monocle and could read the street signs, he was able to correct his mistake. Was it easy? No. He was a nag by nature anyhow, and so he just kept trying till he got it right. Then came the problem of what to do at home. He could see the TV if he sat up real close, but neither of us wanted him to become a couch potato, so to speak. About 6 months before he lost his central vision, my brother-in-law gave Jules his old computer. Jules had 6 months to figure out how to use this marvel of a machine. Soon he was emailing and researching things on the computer. I must say that having those 6 months of sight for working on the computer probably was the single biggest reason he could adapt as quickly as he did with his loss of vision. But there was a fly in the ointment. Jules always had typed using the hunt and peck method, and he was very good at it. But this skill did not work with his loss of vision. He would have to learn how to touch type. On one of his walks, he went to the library and spoke with the librarian. He explained his problem about typing. She said, "Hey, wait a minute. I have an idea." She disappeared into the stacks of books and reappeared with a book on learning to type. She made a large copy of the keyboard and gave it to him while checking out the typing book for him. Here, I must go back in time to the time of those first horrible weeks of confronting his world of darkness. A friend of ours from New York had lost his central vision a couple of years earlier. When I called to tell him about Jules, he told me in no uncertain terms we would have to purchase a reading machine pronto. We did do this, and Jules learned how to operate it. Not hard, but it took a lot of patience to use it effectively. And soon he was reading his own mail, writing his own checks. I never once wrote any of his checks. Although I often checked to see if the invoice and checks were in the right envelope correctly. But he did the rest. He also learned how to do the word puzzle from the daily newspaper on the reading machine, and he did that effectively. Now back to learning how to touch type. Jules brought his copy of the keyboard and placed it on the reading machine. He put his fingers on the letters and memorized the keyboard. For a while, I watched him, but I soon left the room without saying anything. I was sure he would not be able to do this, since his hands and fingers trembled so. It was maybe the first time in our entire married life that I kept my mouth shut. Lucky for him and for me, because he could not see how badly his hands and fingers shook. He just kept trying. When he announced that he had memorized the keyboard, we went to the computer. Again, I must backtrack to the first few weeks of his loss of vision. We had been in contact with a cousin of mine, Eugene Bronstein from Boston. I told him of Julie's problem and how disappointed he was in not being able to continue using the computer effectively. My cousin said not to worry. He had a friend with the same problem, and he found a software for computers that not only enlarged each letter to a size that you could see, but it said the letter out loud as you pressed that key. We got some Velcro and placed it on some key letters so Jules's fingers could always find their way back home, to home plate, so to speak. My cousin gave me his friend's name and telephone number, and that man gladly gave us the name of the business rep selling that product. The representative came in from Boston to our home and left us with a 30-day trial disc to use. Jules was hooked. Hour after hour, Jules spent using this new software. Now back to learning how to touch type. He tried it out. He fumbled, and finally, after countless times of practicing, he started to find his way on the keyboard. I started giving him typing tests. A lady friend of mine, Evelyn, would email him and he would reply. His typing at first was nothing short of bad, poor, whatever you call it. But slowly, very slowly, he started to improve. And after a period of time, he was accepted at the computer school in West Haven, Connecticut, the same veterans facility as the previous workshop he attended. This course was only 3 weeks long. Here, a marvelous instructor, Jane, gave him the hands-on instruction he needed. The new computer was set up in his room at the hospital, and Jane came to this room each day and spent several hours with him. The rest of the time, he practiced. I'm not saying that everything went smoothly. Many times they did not. But Jules had the will and yes, the guts to prevail. At home, he enrolled in the computer course at the senior center. Here they allowed us to donate the software in one of their computers so he could take the course. That instructor, Jim, became such a vital part of Julie's life, whether it was at the class or at home. Jim would come to his aid whenever Jules could not solve the computer problem himself. If Jim was away or just not available due to other commitments, I discovered a cousin from a nearby town that taught computer courses at a community college. I also took such an interest in Jules that words cannot express my gratitude sufficiently for the work he did and the problem-solving done on the computer. These two men often came to lunch and then work on the computer. Hi and Jules also attended a discussion group together. Hi got so interested in Jules, he declared he was committed to him. And so he was. And that commitment has carried over to me. I am now becoming literate on the computer. Jules also had friends, some legally blind, some not. The legally blind friends he befriended at the workshops and some here at home. Our best friends were the Goldsteins. We did not know them personally before Julie's loss, but we did know them as members of the community. Ed lost his central vision the very same month that Jules did, and several months later, they both attended the six-week workshop at West Haven, Connecticut. When Jules was first approached to attend this training, he said, "No, 6 weeks away from home? Are you crazy?" But an unplanned incident occurred that made him change his mind, and he never wavered from that decision. What happened was, when we went down to see the VA rep, the rep told us about the course, where it was, how long it was, and that you had to be approved by several doctors before attending. Jules was not sold. But thank God, that VA rep did not give up on us. He sent us to Boston to see the VA rep there, Dana Millar. While we were chatting with him, a man, a graduate from this course, came in with tubes of oxygen up his nose and holding his oxygen tank, announced he had just come by subway from his home alone. Yes, he too was legally blind. When Jules realized what this man was capable of doing on his own, he said to the rep, "Sign me up for the course. I want to go." And he stood steadfast on this decision. When our newfound friends in Springfield heard Jules was going, Ed decided to take the course too. So the two men, Brenner and Goldstein, went off together. They soon became close friends, and that friendship extended to the wives as well. At home, we shared many good times together, going to Tanglewood, going out for lunch, attending Blind Veterans Association meetings and conventions together, and just visiting each other as well. I often think how this friendship softened the blow of Jules' loss of sight. We made other such friends as well. Jules and Ed became active in the Blind Veterans Association. Ed became the vice president and later treasurer, and Jules became recording secretary and did that job till he became so ill 9 years later. The VA gave him a tape recorder, which he took to the meetings. Then he would take it home and listen to it many, many times. Slowly but surely, he typed the minutes, sent them off to the president and the VA rep, and kept a copy for himself. He sent out letters notifying each member of the forthcoming meeting. Each letter each month was different. He tried to make it interesting and newsworthy. Our own friends back at home were no less remarkable. The poker club. This club was comprised of six men. It started when we gathered at a friend's house to play bridge as couples. Since so many of the people didn't know how to play bridge, the men banded together and played polka. This stuck, and they played every other week for many years to follow. As the years passed, members died or moved away. New members joined. Finally, my husband was the last of the original six men. These new members, such nice human beings, helped Jules. They picked him up without fail from his home each time and returned him. They assisted him in getting in and out of each member's house. The actual playing was also a bit tricky. Jules could see the cards when he held them up very close to his face, but he could not see the cards on the table. So to help him, each member called out their card as they played. Jules had a good memory, and so he was able to do it. The truth of the matter is, I don't ever remember asking him if he won. Sometimes he would tell me about a particular hand. But no matter how he felt, he was always ready to play poker. And they were always, and I mean always, there for him. Tell me, is there anything more remarkable? On more wonderful than these acts of kindness and consideration for one human being to another. We had other friends we went to the theater with, attended classes together, went to dinner with, or just visited. One couple we always exchanged eating at each other's homes. This even extended to the Berkshires. We had a timeshare there with an extra bedroom and bath, and most every year, Evie and Sid would come up with dinner already cooked. We either ate at the timeshare or brought it to the Tanglewood concerts. Sid always did the driving, Evie the cooking, and we supplied the place to lay their heads at night. We always enjoyed these visits. There just wasn't any place that Sid would not drive or a meal that Evie would not cook. Then there was the couple, Myrtle and Jerry, who always found such interesting things to do, outdoor concerts in the summer, lectures and classes to attend in the winter, birthdays and anniversaries to share. Again, Jerry drove us so many places, and Myrtle always gave Julie the front seat. We also went to plays. Plays might have been a problem, but Jules came equipped with his monocle and later especially fitted opera glasses. We always sat in the first or second row. If our tickets did not indicate that, I went to the person in charge and told them of Julie's handicap of low vision. No one ever said, "I can't help you." They always, without exception, found seats up front for us. I was always very grateful to them for their help and understanding. I used to quiz Julie on what he could see. What did the set look like? He had to look at it one section at a time. What color was the actress's dress, etc.? He always gave me the right answer. Jules never said, "I don't want to go. I can't see well enough to enjoy. You go without me." I never heard these words. We always went together, and I never asked if he enjoyed this or that. It was enough that he would go, get whatever enjoyment he could from whatever he attended. It kept us going. It kept our spirits up, and we marched forward. Of course, I can't forget Dan. There was never a veterans meeting he didn't pick up Julie. Rain or shine, Dan came. If I was entertaining, he would take Julie for lunch. If my car was in the shop, he would take us grocery shopping. What a guy. Then there were the neighbors. One lady was always dropping in to say hello. I never quite understood what she said, but I always knew that without a doubt, it made my husband feel better. Another friend was always game to go out to supper the last minute. Again, I never knew what she said or did that made us both feel better, but I was sure that we both did feel better after dining with Ruth than before we went. People like this have a gift of consideration to give, and to them I say a special thank you for your friendship. Another friend got us interested in politics, and we became elected members of a political party. They held their meetings nearby, and generally the meetings were informative and most interesting. And don't forget the parties, always one or two a year. Here, Jules did find something he could do. He volunteered to be on the telephone committee, stuff envelopes, and so forth. Jules had always been an organization man, and so this was second nature to him. We attended services and Bible study on a regular weekly basis. We became familiar faces there and developed a whole new group of friends. One lady was so impressed with Jules and his work on the computer that she asked him to speak at an assisted living facility in the area. The senior center, too, gave him time to hold a workshop for their members of the community confronting the same handicap on how to use the computer with this marvelous new software. He also manned a booth one year at the JCC Senior Fair doing the same thing. The name of the game is to continue to live your life constructively with the handicap you are saddled with. Don't give up. Don't stay home and stay glued to the TV. There are things you can do. You are not sick. You are just handicapped. Find your way. Ask for help. And above all, help yourself. My husband did it. You can too.
Thank you, Ruth, for sharing that incredible story. Thank you.
Thank you for having me.